Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the "no animals were harmed" message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
The Biden administration just announced that they are raising the minimum federal wage for federal employees. Now, granted, that's, you know, only about 70,000 people, but the minimum wage is now $15 an hour for federal employees. It's a start. You know, it's like leading by example, which is a fine thing. I wanted to tell you about the hospital crisis right now. We keep hearing our hospitals are overloaded, our hospitals are overburdened. In the helping professions, if doctors, nurses, right down to the janitors, they're just overwhelmed with Omicron and COVID and all this other stuff. The New York Times had a piece yesterday, the headline, "We know the real cause of the crisis in our hospitals, it's greed." And they start out by talking about what it's like working in these profit-driven hospitals. Now, I remember a time in America, and I'm guessing probably many of you do. I don't know how many states this was the case, but it was certainly the case in Michigan right up until the 1970s when I left Michigan, that hospitals were required to be nonprofits by state law. But as the New York Times reports, chronic understaffing by profit-driven hospitals that predates the pandemic. They quote this one nurse, quote, "I could no longer work in critical care under the conditions I was being forced to work under with poor staffing, and that's when I left." Lawmakers could regulate nurse-patient ratios. They did in California back in 2004, which produced very positive results. There was a proposal to do this in Massachusetts, but the hospital lobby spent $25 million running ads on TV all across the state saying vote no on it, and the ballot initiative was defeated. It's currently on the table in Illinois and Pennsylvania. But what's driving this? What's driving this is hospitals being run for profit. And now you've got hedge funds and vulture capital groups getting into it. Judd Legum did a deep dive about this in today's Popular Info newsletter, popular.info. He writes, in 1975, when the United States had 113 million fewer people, 1.5 million hospital beds in the United States. Today, we have 113 million more people. We have only 900,000 hospital beds. We lost almost half of our hospital beds since 1975. He knows 26 million people live in counties with no intensive care units. Another 11 million people live in counties with no hospitals at all. Why is this? Well, very simply, just between 2010 and 2020, just the last decade, there were more than 680 hospital mergers. At the same time, he notes, at least 120 rural hospitals have closed. So how does this play out? Well, here's the example that Judd Legum lays out in his newsletter. He's quoting himself. This is from April of 2020. In 2017, Cerebras Capital Management, a private equity firm, and by the way, I would add, it's headed up by a guy named Steven Feinberg, who is worth $1.6 billion. Cerebras Capital Management acquired Easton Hospital in Pennsylvania's Lehigh Valley, north of Philly. Shortly after acquiring the hospital, They sold the property, but not the hospital itself, to a real estate investment firm, Medical Properties Trust. So they sold the land underneath the hospital, but not the hospital, which is interesting. So now Easton Hospital's property was packaged with seven other hospitals, which netted Cerebras $304 million on the deal. But now the hospital, Easton, has to pay rent to operate on land that it had owned for the previous 127 years. You see how this game works? It's like, let's slice and dice these existing businesses that happen to be hospitals. Let's just slice and dice them up in ways that can generate continuous income for us. And then it gets really bizarre. He says, in addition to rent, Cerebras also loaded up Easton Hospital with debt. Facing all these additional costs, Easton Hospital's financial condition quickly deteriorated. In March of 2020, Cerebras sent a letter to Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf demanding that the state, quote, assume all operating expenses and liabilities of Easton Hospital, or the company would, quote, proceed immediately on planning to close the facility. So after they've drained all this money out of the hospital, and the hospital is like dying, then they go to the state and say, hey, you want a hospital? Pay up. With the pandemic bearing down, Judd Legum writes, on the state and hospital beds already in short supply, Wolf had little choice. On March 27th, the state announced it would provide Easton Hospital with an infusion of $8 million to keep it open until at least June of last year, June 30th. But Cerebras said they wanted more money, and they threatened to close the facility at midnight. So to avoid shuttering the hospital, Pennsylvania relented and agreed to pay Cerebras $8 million in exchange for a promise to keep the facility open and operating for at least the next 4 weeks. Wow. So, you know, when somebody says, oh, you know, it's COVID, well, yeah, arguably, but we have half as many, a little more than it. We have 900,000 hospital beds in the United States. We used to have 1.5 million. Why? Because we have let this be a for-profit gig. It all boils down to greedy people trying to make money. And at some point, as a country, we need to say, as we did once, we need to say, you know, there are some areas where making a living is fine, but squeezing things for money until it, in many cases, destroys them is not fine. And this has to do with our schools, this has to do with our hospitals, this has to do with our utilities. You know, now you've got PG&E in California that has been convicted of murder because they had money that they were supposed to use to upgrade their power lines or bury their high tension lines so that they wouldn't cause forest fires. And instead, they gave that money to their investors themselves. And they used it to jack up the pay of their CEO. And people died. People are dying in hospitals or not getting into hospital. And we got a crisis with our hospitals right now. At what point do we say enough already? You know, we've been doing this for 40 years now. This all came along with this whole neoliberal transformation of America that began in the 1980s with the Reagan administration. And that got adopted by Democrats in the 90s and became kind of conventional wisdom throughout the 2010s. And now we're seeing the result of it. It doesn't actually work better for a country when greed is the primary motivating force. There isn't a magic to the marketplace with greed any more than there's a magic to, you know, football if one player decides that he's going to act outside the bounds of normal, you know, outside the bounds of the NFL rules to win a game. My rant yesterday, I realized, and so I'll stop at that point. That's what's going on. As I mentioned, this is the anniversary of Citizens United. This week was the 12th anniversary of Citizens United. This was the death knell of democracy. And by the way, one of the reasons why, in my opinion, why the Republicans were 100% united in fighting against the John Lewis Voting Rights and Advancement Act was that it rolled back parts of Citizens United. It required the right-wing billionaires to start disclosing who they were giving money to. What's amazing to me is that 48 out of 50 Democrats were in favor of it. In favor of saying, yeah, let's you know, make the billionaires tell us what they're up to. But here we are. And if we don't change this whole problem of money corrupting our politics, we are not going to be a functioning democracy. And we are going to continue to have these oligarchic and neo-fascistic forces pushing hard against us as long as they can buy politicians. We have to put an end to it. Sarah in Minneapolis. Hey, Sarah, what's on your mind today?
Hey, I'm getting through your book on the hidden history of healthcare, and it's just wonderful. I'm a healthcare provider myself in Minneapolis, and I was reading the Star Tribune this morning, and they were talking about the Office of the Inspector General discovering a certain for-profit insurer that was a tremendous outlier, raked in about $3.7 billion with their risk assessment of seniors, and also accusing them of going into health records actually so that they can collect more money.
So I'm assuming you're talking about United Healthcare's Medicare Advantage scheme.
Well, yes, Medicare Advantage, because the Star Tribune inquired on what the company was, and it was United Healthcare.
Yeah.
It was like this huge outlier compared to other for-profits. Not surprised. And when I'm at my job, I was listening to a physician. I'm a hospital-based physical therapist. And he was talking on the phone with a loved one of a patient saying, I'm sorry, we can't do this because he's got United Healthcare plan and they're not going to allow us to do this medical procedure.
Wow. This is what you expose yourself to if you sign up for Medicare Advantage, is that you're going to have everything pre-approved. And very often they'll say, no, we're not going to give you that.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm in Minnesota, and this is like United Healthcare Central here.
Oh, it's where they're headquartered.
And yeah, it's where they're headquartered. And another thing is, like, their mental health is run by their offshoot called Optum. And I know some people that have United Healthcare managing their mental health services. They're only going to pay for a really short session. So they don't even pay for the full session and reimburse it anymore.
Yeah. You see a lot of companies are refusing to pay for therapy. They'll only pay for drugs, basically. So, you know, a psychiatrist, 15 minutes, write a prescription. But, you know, hey, if it's going to take a couple of hours, you know, over a period of weeks to work through your PTSD with EMDR or psychotherapy or whatever, no, we won't pay for that. That's too expensive. I get it. Sarah, thanks for the heads up on that. You know, United Healthcare is the company that Bill McGuire walked away from United Healthcare with $1.6 billion. Stephen Hemsley walked away from there with $700 million. They've got a whole pile of executives who make more than $1 million a year of each. It shouldn't surprise us that they might be accused of ripping off the government. Shouldn't surprise us. That said, they are not unique in that by any means. Justin in Maui, Hawaii. Hey, Justin, how you doing? What's up?
I'm a teacher, and I'm on the Democratic Party of Hawaii State Central Committee, and we passed a resolution of disappointment with Democratic Congressman Ed Case just recently, because in November, Pelosi and 98% of all Democrats tried passing the infrastructure bill and the Build Back Better bill linked together through the House. But Ed Case, who's co-chair of the Blue Dog Caucus, was able to use his, I think, four other colleagues to de-link it. And that de-linking it stopped all leverage that Sinema and Manchin would have in passing Build Back Better by itself. So now I have a two-year-old and a one-month-old, and I was getting paid $600 to help with daycare costs. I was budgeting that, and now that's gone. And not a lot of people are talking. Not a lot of people know that Ed Case, of all people in Hawaii, leveraged and broke apart that bill on his own with his caucus. Democracy isn't a spectator sport. So I wrote a resolution. I presented it to the party. It passed 46-19. I don't remember that happening last 20 years.
So you've got a blue dog. You've got a phony Democrat there in Hawaii as your member of the House of Representatives. And y'all are going to start calling him out. And are you going to? Does he have a primary challenger this year?
Yeah, he does, but his primary challenger doesn't have any experience. Real nice guy, says a lot of stuff. So this is my thing, is I feel he's doing this because he knows he doesn't have a big challenger. He can get away with it. I mean, in the past, he voted for the bankruptcy bill. He voted for the Iraq war. And he argued with me after I passed Citizens United resolution that passed the first state legislature in Hawaii, and he still debated that was a good case. So he's very conservative, and this was a huge disappointment. And people need to know about it.
Yeah. Well, hopefully a whole bunch of people just heard about it, Justin. Thanks for calling and sharing that story. That's great. Actually, let me just take it. We've got about a minute here till the break. Let me just take it a step further. How is you're on the State Central Committee for your Democratic Party. The party just voted to say what specifically about Case?
It was that they were disappointed in his actions. We laid it out in the resolution that he worked to de-link the bill, and then he voted for it in December when it didn't matter.
Right. So it was a mild hand slap.
We wanted a distance. Yeah. So yeah, definitely. It's a lot harder to do the censure, but the culture here really is not to rock the boat. And like I said, sure. Tulsi Gabbard didn't vote to impeach the president. We didn't do anything then. Right. So, but this was huge. I mean, child tax credit, paid family leave,
sure.
Universal preschool. Like, this really affected,
Does Hawaii only have one member of Congress, member of the House?
No. We also have Kai Kahele. Everybody else, nobody had to lobby Kai Kahele, Mazie Hirono, or Brian Schatz.
Right.
Nobody had to lobby them, but right. We definitely had everyone.
So you have two members of the House. Is he in the seat that used to be?
Hanabusa.
Yeah.
Hanabusa's seat.
Okay.
Hanabusa ran for governor and then opened it up for Ed Case.
There you go. Okay. Thank you, Justin. Thanks a lot.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Thomas in Mossy Head, Florida. Hey, Thomas, what's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to say you are the life preserver as I flounder in a sea of red.
Okay. I'm glad to be here for you. So what's up?
I appreciate it. I have kind of come to the conclusion of how easy it is to become a Republican. Number one, blindly follow. And number two, don't think for yourself.
And I would say number three, easily lie.
Well, don't think for yourself. Same thing.
Yeah.
Another quick thing is, I live here in the panhandle of Florida, which is probably 75-80% red. Mm-hmm. And I was in a small town on the main street. There's a gun store. And on the front of the gun store is a 4x8 sign that says "Plump Trump won."
Mm-hmm.
So just out of curiosity, I went in there trying not to start anything, but they had targets of Biden, Harris, targets.
Wow. Yeah. The last time I was in a shooting range was, I think it was 2009. It was right after the election, and they had targets that were clearly African Americans, but they not have targets that were identifiable as a single individual.
They also had the targets, which have been in there a long time. It's just a characterization of a black man with an afro, with giant lips, and a cross through it. It's just I don't know. It's insane, and this is a community of Trump won and kill the Democrats.
It's sad, Thomas, and I just retweeted, Mehdi Hassan put out a piece that was a little clip of Tucker Carlson talking to, I think it was Candace Owens, and he said, with this kind of stuff, with this kind of poison filling our airwaves 24/7, coming out of Fox and all these other networks, it's fairly easy to predict that you're going to have people doing terrible things and you're going to have people believing crazy stuff. It is so sad, but you're absolutely right. Thomas, I wish you the very best. Thanks for the call. Jim in Los Angeles. Hey, Jim, what's up?
I just wanted to remind people that the Republicans took so much time and effort in the past 15 years talking about how we needed to stamp out political correctness. And then all of a sudden, now in the last year, critical race theory and their lambasting of it is all about making people feeling uncomfortable, right? Isn't that going against the political correctness that they were talking about?
That's a great point. That is a great point, Jim.
Why is nobody bringing this up?
I hadn't thought of that, but you're absolutely right. And you know, rebrand the whole Republican hysteria around CRT as Republicans trying to enforce political correctness.
Right.
Yeah. In our schools, no less. They want to enforce political correctness in our schools.
And everybody else, too, if you consider that, what is it, the rule in Florida or whatever that somebody wants to pass about nobody feeling uncomfortable and whatever.
Yeah.
So it's the same stuff. Why is nobody talking about this?
Yeah. Excellent point. Jim, maybe people will start to now. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Andrea in Tucson, Arizona. Hey, Andrea, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hey, Tom. Thanks for what you do, really. I just wanted to bring up, I know you've mentioned about money in politics, and I know that was going to be part of the voting bill to get some of that out. Citizens United need to be overturned. But back in the GOP frenzy of investigating everything during the Obama administration, if you remember, and I'm sure you do, Daryl Issa, the finance committee chair, had many, many meetings on the IRS attacking the so-called conservative PACs.
Yep.
And during those committee hearings, one thing was brought out that I had no clue, but I just think maybe that's a way to look at money. And that was that way back, I think, in the 50s, the IRS had changed their agency term for investigating the 501c4, I think it is, the PACs.
Right.
And they changed the wording from the federal law that said exclusively that these PACs would be doing public service. They were not political. But the IRS, I believe, changed it to primarily, which is why they go out and look for more information to really see what the percentage is.
Right.
So I just wondered, and I'll be glad to take this off the air, if there's a way maybe that law could be enforced to change it back to primarily and cut some of that money.
That would be a job for either Congress or the Commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service. And, one of the branches that was badly corrupted by Donald Trump. But it's an excellent point, 501c3s. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Doug in Bellevue, Washington. Hey, Doug, what's on your mind today?
Hi. I read an article by Jane Mayer in The New Yorker on Virginia Thomas. And I got to say, I was outraged. I try to keep up on things, but I had no idea how long and how pervasive the influence has been. And I'm just curious. It's like, as a democracy, why do we allow this to go on? Why does John Roberts allow his court's name to be, you know, to support that kind of activity? I'll take the answer offline, but either talk me down or tell me what to do.
No, Doug, I'm with you. I have been ranting about this for over a decade. You know, I wrote about this in my book, 2 years ago. I published The Hidden History of the Supreme Court and the Betrayal of America. Ginny Thomas has been, you know, she used to be an employee of the Heritage Foundation. She's hooked up with a bunch of other organizations. She's made hundreds of thousands of dollars as an advocate for issues that her husband rules on. If he were a judge on any other federal court, he would have been barred, disbarred, kicked off, impeached, imprisoned. I mean, you know, this is a clear violation of the Federal Code of Judicial Ethics at the very least. And yet the Supreme Court has put itself above the law and said it doesn't apply to us. And so, you know, and most recently, of course, she was, you know, organizing buses for Donald Trump's attack on the Capitol on January 6th. Apparently, I haven't read Jane Mayer's piece yet. But I'm assuming that that's probably where it starts.
I was looking up why Clarence Thomas ruled the way he did on releasing the White House's information, came across this article.
Yeah, he was the one vote. No, don't release the information. Because it may have been because his wife was right in the middle of it. I made that point a couple days ago on the air.
So what does the average citizen do about this?
Well, the average citizen has, you know, what we need is to push this up to make it a political issue. so that Congress can get involved. Congress has the power to, with very, quite easily, actually, with a very simple law, to simply say that the code of federal, the Federal Code of Judicial Ethics applies to the Supreme Court as well as to all other courts. Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution clearly says Congress has the power to regulate the courts, including the Supreme Court. And this would be a regulation of the court. It's not, this is not difficult. It's not rocket science. It should have been done 3 decades ago.
Yeah, and the other two branches should, you know, weigh in on this, right?
Well, this Congress would be one of those two branches, yes. And they would pass that law, and then it would be signed by the executive branch, by the president, and it would affect the third branch, the judiciary. And I have not yet read Jane Mayer's piece. Some things I just kind of push off to the weekend when I'm going to have the time because it's a longer piece, but I'm looking forward to it. And thanks for...
Yeah, it's horrifying.
Yeah.
So write my congressperson.
There you go. Or call them. Yeah. Raise hell with your elected officials. That's the answer to this. Doug, thank you very much for the call. Donna in West Sayville, New York. Hey, Donna. Thanks for listening to us.
Hi,
on SiriusXM.
Tom.
What's up?
Hi, Tom. Just want to say first, I really enjoy your show. I get so much from it, even anger, a lot of anger. But, you know, we all got to get out there and just vote like hell come November for every single Democrat on the ballot.
We absolutely do.
Just wondering what the latest is with DeJoy on the post office, because if there's going to be ballot issues across the country in these states that are putting up these restrictions, then, you know, voting ballots and the ballot boxes are going to become seriously an issue. And we still have DeJoy there. Right. It's going to be questionable about whether, you know, the ballots ever get to be counted.
Yeah. There was a really good article about this with some detail on it, and I emailed it to myself, and now I can't find it. My recollection, the turncoat Democrat who was on the postal board has left, but the appointments, first of all, let me put the caveat on, I believe this to be true, but I'm not asserting it to be absolutely true. I could be wrong on some of these details, okay? But my recollection is that what has happened is that one or two of Biden's nominees for the Postal Board of Governors are being held up in the Senate for confirmation.
Okay.
And that, you know, without that critical mass on that board, you're not going to get DeJoy fired. And
okay.
I guess that's it
right,
in short form.
But he's got to get those two appointments passed in the, you know,
yeah,
Senate, as always.
I believe. And that's why I wanted to find that piece, because there was nuance in it and details in it that I was unaware of, and I think most Americans are unaware of. Thank you, Don.
Okay,
great
no
to
problem.
Hear from you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye now. Mark in Coon Rapids, Minnesota. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind?
Listening to Congressman Polkan, and he was talking about raising the ceiling for Social Security.
Yes.
And being a longtime baseball fan, yeah. And as being a longtime baseball fan, I was looking at Matt Scherzer's latest salary, and he signed a contract for $130 million for 3 years.
Wow!
And so I broke it down. He's making $43 million a year, and that, according to last year, he pitched 179 and a third inning. And that makes for $241,680 per inning for those. And then for each one of the outs in those innings, he makes $80,560. So if he gets really aggressive two hitters, he can be finished with paying for his Social Security for the year after two pitches. And that blows my mind.
Yeah, well, and this is why it's so absurd that we should say only people who make less than $140,000 have to pay Social Security taxes at the full rate, and that after you make $140,000 a year, more or less, you don't have to pay a penny in Social Security taxes. So you make, you know, $1 million a year, you're only paying taxes on your first $140,000. You make $1 billion, you only pay taxes on your first $140,000. It's wrong. It's just wrong. It's not good for Social Security. It's not good for the country. And you figure, I mean, with the Social Security tax is fairly minimal. I think it's around 3.5%, as I recall, and which is actually would be more than Jeff Bezos, my recollection is correct, or several of our high-profile billionaires, let's say. You know, they were all paying between 1% and 3% in income taxes a couple of years ago in the ProPublica study that came out last year. And so if there was at least a 3.5% tax on them for Social Security, they'd be paying a little bit. I mean, it's just it's nuts. It's really, truly nuts. Mark, thank you. That was some great math. That was super. Pat in Lake Elsinore, California. Hey, Pat, what's up?
Hi there, Tom. It's first-time caller, long-time listener.
Thank you.
I heard this. I'm going to make it quick. I heard this on another from another talk show host. DirecTV dropped ONN.
Yes.
His suggestion was go after the distributors of the news people that, like Fox. Well, the distributor. Let me see. When I say distributor, I mean like Spectrum. They spread lies, so stop carrying the programs. If we sue the distributors, maybe, just maybe, what do you think? Am I making sense?
Yeah, I know. I understand where you're going with that, Pat. Yeah, I don't think that you can sue them. The DirecTV, though, you know, tip of the hat to them for dropping OAN. On the other hand, they were the one who put OAN on the air in the first place. They funded it, in fact. They gave the people who were putting OAN together huge pile, I mean, millions of dollars to get this right-wing network up and running. And then when they got exposed for it and AT&T's role in it, AT&T owned DirecTV. Now AT&T is spinning off DirecTV and DirecTV is spinning off OAN. It's like, you know, the chickens have come home to roost. But, you know, the damage was done. I've tried, I've reached, Louise and I watch TV on Sling, and I reached out to them and said, can you take Fox off my Sling? I just, you know, I don't even want it there. And they're like, no, you can't do that. And
why not? HBO can, you know, you don't have to get HBO if you don't want it.
Well, that's
I think it can be done.
It's a premium channel. And here's how it gets even weirder is that MSNBC, you know, in many cases, with many cable companies, you have to pay an extra like $5 a month to get MSNBC. But Fox is free. And it's just like, how is this, you know, any kind of, how do we have any kind of rational media landscape, you know, with this huge right-wing tilt built into our media after 40 years of hearing how
the media has a left-wing bias?
That's nonsense. But Pat, I don't know how the law, how a lawsuit could work on this. The only lawsuit that I think may have some potency will be the families of people who died who didn't get vaccinated because they listened to particular hosts. They may have a case. We'll see.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I've been waiting for that shoe to fall. It hasn't so far, to the best of my knowledge. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Tom Harbin here with you, Lawrence in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Lawrence, thanks for listening to KTNF. What's up?
You know, we have kind of a president that doesn't really force the issue. We have 17% of people that are still unvaccinated, and we have a cost of $1 billion a year and $1.6 million a day to fund these unvaccinated people. So what I think we should do is this. if you're vaccinated, then you should be able to take a tax deduction equivalent to that 17% to balance out those people that are unvaccinated. And I'll tell you why. Because you need that tax deduction to pay for their incredulous demeanor, such as when they go to the hospital, you can't go to the hospital and get your appointment. It took me 3 months to get an appointment. At that particular juncture, my disease or whatever I would have had, had it been serious, could have progressed in that amount of time because I'm waiting for a bed or waiting for an exam from a doctor because they're too overwhelmed with COVID.
Agreed.
See? And so we should be able to deduct that from our taxes. And that's the way to do it. See, when Biden said yesterday in his speech, I'm an institutionalist, that's not going to work. I'm sorry, sir. Institutionalism is not going to work because that's been broken by this last guy in office now. We have to do stuff, whether it's bombastic or not. The Democratic Party has to stand on their own 2 feet. And there's one thing they say about the Democratic Party. We never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity. But anyway, taxes. Let's think about that. Comments, please, Tom. What do you think?
Yeah, well, Lawrence, I think you're right that there needs to be some consequence to not being vaccinated. I'm not sure that giving money to people who are vaccinated is going to cause the people who aren't vaccinated to think twice about getting vaccinated. But I do think that when the insurance company starts saying, no, we're not going to pay your bill. Sorry, you got long COVID, your physical therapy and your psychologist and your heart doctor and your erectile dysfunction pills, those are all on you. We're not going to pay for that. That's how I would do it. Lawrence, thank you for the call. Colleen in Long Island, New York. Hey, Colleen, what's on your mind today?
You had a couple of people on that kind of touched a nerve, and then you brought it a little more forward when you were talking about abortion. What's going on with the Supreme Court. And you brought up reproductive rights in the sense of birth control.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a friend, us women, we do talk amongst ourselves and who's had miscarriages and who's not been able to get pregnant and all of those things. And this one woman I knew was trying desperately to have a child. And no matter how many times she got pregnant, it never took. It always turned into a miscarriage, and her marriage ended as a result of it, and not because of him, because she just couldn't deal with it. She right. just became, so unhappy.
Yeah.
Anyway, what would you do with this woman? Do you put her in jail because her body is not able to stay pregnant?
Well,
how far down this slippery slope does this go?
I don't think the worldview that views women as toaster ovens for babies would necessarily want to put her in jail, but they would consider her disposable. I mean, infertile women had even fewer rights and power and respect in society than did women who had children until 200 years ago.
You're speaking to the choir here because as a woman who never got married and didn't have children, I actually had a conversation with my family. I am no longer sitting at the children's table. Just because I didn't get married. And have, so I'm not coming for holiday dinners if you do not sit me with the adults.
Wow.
And this was when I was in my 20s. There's always this thing about women, and I'm postmenopausal, so it doesn't even matter anymore, but women are valued for their fertility.
Yep.
And this thing that we have done to women in the sense of giving them only that value, a memo to the men in the world, we are actually part of the human race, and we are not, there's no bun in the oven. We are not appliance.
And I would argue that the whole beauty thing is a piece of that. It's, if a young woman is, quote, beautiful, typically what that means is that, she's perfect for reproduction. She's not defective. She's not.
But to add to that point is that, they used to use the word spinster. They don't have any such word for men. But after you're 25, you're a thornback, which is a fish that has this thorny spine. And it's because you are not palatable.
Oh, God.
Okay. No, seriously.
I get it. It's all coming out of this mentality that women are toaster ovens.
Yeah, we are appliances. We have a bun in the oven, and you just keep churning them out because we're not actually people. And this whole thing about they don't make men get into bed with a woman and say, get her pregnant. because that's your, you know, we want babies. But once a woman is pregnant, and Giselle hit it with the nail on the head when she said they are only pro-pregnancy.
Right.
Because, or and it was the pastor that you talked to also. They, once this baby is born, they don't care if it lives in poverty, gets an education, dies on the street. They don't care.
They have an ideology that it's up to that person and their family. It's no longer the responsibility of society. Once a baby is born, it is the responsibility of their family. And if that family is poor, or if that family can't provide, or if that family is dysfunctional, or if that family is abusive, that is not society's problem, you know, until it spills over into the streets.
I tell you what we do to try and I mean, it's just a thought. If every man who got a woman pregnant had to have a DNA test to prove he is or isn't. Now, let's say what we can't prove who the baby's father is, but we can with DNA.
Right.
That the government is on. If the government is going to say a woman has to stay pregnant, then the government is on the hook for everything that child needs, including an education, unless they want to go after the man.
How about child support begins the day of the positive pregnancy test?
Absolutely. But let's say you can't track his sorry ass down. Okay, so you just can't get there. But then the government, if the government is going to say a woman has to stay pregnant, then the government has to take care of this child if she cannot.
There you go. There you go. Colleen, I need to move along. I want to get some other voices in here. But thank you.
Put it in the pocketbook.
Yeah,
okay?
There you go. You are very articulate. Thank you. Brilliant. Sadie in Donaldsonville, Georgia. Hey, Sadie, what's on your mind today?
This whole thing of the abortion has really got everybody thinking, but a Sunday school lesson where Abram and Lot divided their family up to have more space because the land couldn't sustain the number of people and livestock.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Sunday school teacher was saying about abortion, that child that was aborted might be the next president. And I thought, I didn't know that I had shook my head, but I did. And she said, do you mean you're for abortion? And I said, no, I'm against abuse of anybody. And then I told her about a nephew who was 4. He told his mom, I know where I was before I was born. And she waited and she said, we were all in a big space and floating and waiting for our chance to be born, and we had no eyes. That was awesome to me, the idea that the eyes are what is, that's where it's attached, the soul to the eyes. Because I've always heard the eyes were the door to the soul.
Mm-hmm.
But then I thought, well, I need more information for this Sunday school teacher. She asked me more. And so I started doing research, and I said, you know what? The whole thing is about sperm cells and eggs getting together. And men with one ejaculation could get millions of sperm cells, just one. And they're created daily, all the time. But then women only have about 300 to 500 eggs in their whole childbearing mm-hmm. age. And by the time they decide to have children, a number of those are already dead, and right. they're gone. And so the chances of that sperm getting together with that egg, and then you're going to apologize to God that you didn't have sex in 1980 or 1990, and that child isn't going to be born. It gets so ridiculous.
It gets very, very complex.
Yeah. I'm not a mathematician.
Ecclesiastically.
I don't know what the chances are of even one child being born, you know?
Yeah.
But we got to get over ourselves and this gets so ridiculous. And it God takes care of this child-making thing if we would just leave it alone and quit meddling.
I see that's absolutely brilliant. And thanks for the story. Thank you very much for the story. Steve in Mushias, Washington. Hey, Steve.
Mushias.
Yeah, what's up?
Yes. I just want to point out how the language itself plays into this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a male is a man, a female is a woman. When a pregnancy fails, it's a miscarriage, like all the woman has to do is carry the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that tells enough of the story for me.
These are all excellent points. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember being with a woman that was really into the equal rights thing in the 70s, and she was got upset about the chairman of a committee being a chairman, not a chairperson.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand it then, but I think I understand it now.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, we're trying to degenerize our language as much as possible, but you know, this is the stuff that's left over from the old Norse and German that informed English.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Nikki in Joplin, Missouri. Hey, Nikki, what's on your mind today?
I wanted to say, when I was 21, I had a miscarriage. And then when I got married, I had another one. And they found out I had a tilted uterus, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they said that can cause, you know, that caused the miscarriages.
Uh-huh.
Well, later, I got pregnant with my husband, and I didn't even know it. Because I just had a miscarriage,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I can't imagine what they would have done, you know, if, thank goodness I lived in Illinois then, but.
Or if Mike Pence was coming after you to prove that your miscarriage was self-induced.
Right, and I had a tilted uterus because my grandmother had one,
right.
And she only had one son because she couldn't, it was hard for her to get pregnant.
Yeah, no, I get
and
it.
That is true when you have a tilted uterus. It's, and also, I wanted to make a comment that I really believe, and I listened to Neil Cotto and Lawrence Tribe, I really like him. Next, you're going to come for gay rights.
Yep.
And you'll be in trouble for getting contraceptives. Businesses will be able to tell women what they can and can't do.
Yep.
About that. And I want to know if this will backfire, maybe, because...
That's my hope. That's my hope, Nikki,
is that
you know, the Republicans, because abortion was legal, Republicans have used abortion as a wedge issue for 50 years now. Once abortion is illegal, I think Democrats will be able to use it as a wedge issue. You know, time will tell, but I think that's going to be the case. Nikki, thank you for the call. I have to move along. I'm sorry. Gary in hometown Illinois. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Hello, Tom. Number one, thank you for all that you and all the progressives do. I watch Steffi every morning before I have to leave for work.
Cool.
Thanks. My point is that it's not my idea. It's been around for a while, but I haven't heard it mentioned much lately. What about insurance for gun owners? We have to have car insurance. You know, and with any kind of roadblock that we can bring into the conversation. And also, is car insurance federally regulated? Is it a federal thing, or is
those are state laws? Those are all state laws. You are singing my song, Gary. That we should be regulating guns the same way we regulate cars. You know, you have to prove proficiency. You have to prove you know how to drive, and you know, have to take a test. You have to prove you know the law. So the same thing with guns. There should be a shooting range test, and there should be a written test. So you get your license. Then you have to register your gun every year with the federal government and pay a small registration fee. And then you have to have liability insurance because what you have is something that is deadly. It's designed to kill people. Cars are not designed to kill people, but they do kill people, 50,000 of them a year. And so we have to have liability insurance for cars. We're killing about as many people with guns every year. Why do we not have liability insurance with guns? Why is it that if those Sandy Hook kids had been plowed down by a drunk driver in the street, they would have each one of their families would have gotten $1 million from Geico or whatever, but because they were shot by a kid with an AK-47 or an AR-15, they got nothing. I mean, you know, there was no penalty, and the insurance companies would act like a barrier.
But can't we legislate that federally? There's federal laws that call
I don't think so.
Regulations on things.
Maybe you could use the Interstate Commerce Clause to regulate that, but you know, I'd like to see at least some states begin this process. I'm with you, Gary. Thank you very much for the call, Gareth in Stratford, New Hampshire. Hey, Gareth, what's up?
I actually really liked how you talked about. There was actually one show I saw you do where you talked with John Fugelsang about kind of the right wing and the right wing Christianity, how they don't go hand in hand. And I totally agree with you, because I can tell you from experience, the church that I most recently go to, that they always talk badly about people that are poor, marginalized groups, and they always talk bad about, like, Black Lives Matter, even though, like, mainly they're just trying to, you know, have better wages, have better, you know, more opportunity. And I totally agree. The same thing with the abortion thing, how essentially they're trying to make it illegal. And at the same time, like what they say, they're pro-life, like Republicans, they're also pro-death penalty.
Yeah, and let's remember that the pro-life movement up until 1974, the people who called themselves the pro-life movement were the anti-death penalty movement. And the anti-abortion people hijacked that phrase. Gareth, thank you. Very well said. Randy in Branson, Missouri. Hey, Randy. What's up?
Yeah, hey, Tom. Thanks for taking the call. I'm very pro-choice. I can't imagine the chaos that's going to be unleashed if that gets Roe versus Wade is overruled. But when it comes to stating arguments, I never hear a father's right in that. It's always the mother. It's between the mother and the physician, the mother and her priest or whatever. But a father may not be able to have a baby at that time for the exact same reason that some women choose abortion. He's going to be on the line financially, and he's just never in the mix, it seems like.
Yeah, well, that's because the baby's not growing in his body.
Well, you said earlier, that, you know, it was kind of an off remark, but child support should start at conception.
Yeah.
That guy may not be able to keep his lights on. That type of thing. I don't know. It seems to me
if we're going to force women to carry the child, then maybe we should force men to pay for it. I mean, they play a 50-50 role in this, you know?
Tom, if that child goes on food stamps or Medicare, the state will go after the father for child support automatically. He doesn't have a choice.
In Missouri?
Now,
is that the case in Missouri? I don't think that's the case all around the country.
I think it is. I think that's a state mandate, but it's definitely in Missouri. I practice law in three states, and it's in all the states I practice in.
Huh. Interesting.
If she goes on public assistance, the state initiates the child support procedure.
Fascinating. Liz in Los Angeles. Hey, Liz, what's on your mind today?
Hi, good morning, Tom. I'm calling about the Roe versus Wade issue. It's going to be a social work and save the world. I got rid of that illusion very quickly, and I went to work for the Superior Court out here in L.A. and ended up working in the largest family law courtroom. I'm only telling you this so I can tell you about my observations. If anything, I think after working in social services and the court system and seeing how people act, I think people should be licensed before they're allowed to procreate. They do so much damage to children by fighting, and it's unconscionable. And
well, that's not going to happen, Liz. Do you have a plan B?
No, I don't. And unfortunately, you know, people who allegedly care for children, and then I think each of these Christians who think so terrible, go out and adopt one of these children.
Yeah.
And then we'll see how it works.
Yeah.
You know, it's just
It's just unconscionable. And by the way, that rant that you're talking about not getting vaccinated, I keep repeating that thing about each of those fuck people being vaccinated and having to have, and anyone who doesn't have to have doesn't have vaccination has to be tested every single day.
Yeah.
Every single
day.
Well,
I think that's how they're doing it at Fox News now. I mean, I think pretty much everybody is vaccinated. Liz, thank you. Mark in Valley, Washington. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind today?
How you doing, Tom? Hey, it's almost like Social Security was set up by a bunch of rich people to how it gets funded, huh?
Yeah. Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise.
I think that was the compromise that Franklin Roosevelt had to make in order to get it at
I'm
all,
sure it was. You know? But what I really called about was that lady that called about the wolves. It's not any better in Eastern Washington. I called both of my senators and my Congresswoman McMorris Rogers, which usually is a waste of time because anytime you talk to her people, they don't know where she stands on anything. Right. Anytime I've ever asked about any issue, they have no idea where she stands on it.
Because her stand will depend on which lobbyist she talked to last.
Yeah, exactly. But she opened up this area for the woods, for the forest to be raped, so I'm sure she's not standing up for the wolves.
Yeah.
But, I like 40 miles north of Spokane and on 395, and if you keep going past me towards the town of Chihuahua, right before you get to the Indian Casino, they got a box truck container off on the side of the road where you can see it, and the whole side of it says, caution, dangerous predators, and they have a picture of wolves and mountain lions and a number to call. You know, so I mean, the part of the problem is the mentality up here. These are the same people that back Trump. They listen to the hyperbole. You know, they're taking out the sheep, they're taking out the cattle. There's ways for those ranchers to be reimbursed federally for this stuff.
Right.
They don't have to kill the wolves.
Right, and there's ways to keep the wolves away.
These are a bunch of Don Trump Jr. trophy hunters that are just using this as an excuse, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it could be, or it's just, you know, it's a cheaper way to protect the cattle and the sheep than more expensive ways that would preserve the wolves. And, you know,
I mean,
they're just looking at the bottom line.
My argument to all these people is we have plenty of sheep and cattle. We do not have enough wildlife left on this planet.
Yeah, excellent point. Thank you, Mark. Thanks for the heads up on that and the call. Tom in Temecula, California. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind?
Well, corporate rule changes, but first, I know you don't like callers to carry on about everything you do, but I, on behalf of all your listeners, want to thank Louise Hartman for her dedication, patience, and support for everything she does.
I'm with you.
Do what you do.
That said, we have 1 minute.
Okay, so if we revise, I think that instead of profit being the primary motive of corporations, there needs to be a Hippocratic element to it. Put it at the beginning, the first thing is do no harm. Whatever else you do to make money for your shareholders, you do no harm.
Yeah. You know, we used to have this understanding that, and I write about this in my book on monopolies at some length. We used to have an understanding in America, and much of it was actually baked into law, that a corporation had multiple stakeholders. A corporation had an obligation to the communities in which they do business. They have an obligation to their customers. They have an obligation to their employees. They have an obligation to the institution, the corporation itself. All of that, and they have an obligation to their shareholders. All of that got changed in the Reagan era when literally the Supreme Court changed the rules of the game. And legislation changed the rules of the game, and the way that the Reagan administration was enforcing the rules of the game changed so that now corporations only answer their shareholders. They can tell their customers to take a leap. They can tell local community. They can poison local communities. None of those things, the only thing that matters is shareholder value. And it is a terrible way to run an economy. It's a terrible way to run a country. And I'm with you, Tom. There needs to be a Hippocratic Oath for corporations. I'm absolutely with you. Thank you. Fritz in Palm Desert, California. Hey, Fritz, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, Tom, this is in regards to Donald Trump taking the stance that he actually believed his own lies.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's unlikely simply because wouldn't he have to take the stand to assert that?
I think he might be willing and capable of doing that. I could see Donald Trump very easily saying, no, I was not committing fraud around the election because I actually believed it was stolen.
Yeah, but that would open up everything that is presented as far as the fraud itself to questioning as well.
But he did behave like a person who believed it was true. I mean, he was tweeting about it. He was yelling about it. He was warning about it. I'm not saying he did believe it was true. I think he's a very, very competent con man. But I am concerned about the ability of the federal government to prosecute him, for fraud. If his defense is going to be that he believed that the country was going down the tubes and he had to save it.
Well, that's a possibility. But then you bring into the idea that what means are you allowed to utilize in order to change those results?
Right. And that's where January 6th becomes the straw that broke the camel's back, as they say. I'm with you. Thank you, Fritz. MJ in Seattle. Hey, MJ, what's up?
I'm calling today to give some advice to people who have someone in the hospital, and there are millions and millions of Americans right now who have somebody in the hospital. They're under such pressure that the possibility of people being discharged before they can take care of themselves at their place. It's a risk, a big risk. And I had to step up and offer to be an advocate on their medical power of attorney because they were suffering from COVID. They picked up COVID at a hospital when they were recovering from an operation and from a septic infection. And it's important to know that not everybody's ready to go, and to step in and be part of the evaluation and discussion about what happens for somebody. My friend is out of state, so I couldn't say, I'll come to your place and clean the fridge and be with you an hour every day. Mm-hmm. That wasn't possible. But I could volunteer to meet with the hospital social worker and anyone else involved in the discussion about their discharge, and it was averted because my friend is a tall person. She's always been thin, but she only weighs 96 pounds now.
Oh my. MJ, I gotta run, I'm sorry, but watch your friends carefully. Hey, special thanks to Louise Hartman, Sean Taylor, Nate Atwell, Jamie Holly, Joyce the Hammer, Nance, Nigel Peacock, Sue Nethercutt, Patrick Coit, Geraldyn Halbert, Ron Hartenbaum, Chase Spross, Nicholas Miller, Pat Sweeney, Jabbermocky, Jay LeBlanc, Connor Arroyo, and Carne Verde, the folks who help make this program work every single day. Thank you so much to my entire staff and our crew and volunteers and people helping out, and to you for watching or listening and for responding, letting your stations know that you're listening, let the advertisers know. Thank you. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.